Good morning. I'm Cal Winslow, your host, and this morning, welcome back to our series, Where Are We Now? Our purpose is to examine some of our most urgent concerns, climate change, international conflict, race and inequality, and the state of the Earth's resources, especially now as we enter this period of transition. And this morning, I thought we should shift our focus a bit and get a little bit closer to home and think a bit about where we are now, where we stand on one issue which seems to be all-encompassing, seems overwhelming, and that's the issue of the new administration and the new rules on immigration. So our guests this morning are Loreto Rojas of Mendocino and Jackie Ayala of Fort Bragg, and we're going to be talking about immigrants and Latinos here on the coast, and we're going to be talking about it, very sadly, I have to say, in the context of this president's pledge to deport millions of people from this country. So good morning, Loreto.
Good morning, Cal. Thank you for having me.
Great. And Jackie, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me to be with you today.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And listen, why don't we begin with just a bit of more introductions. And I'll start with Loreto. You were born and educated in Chile, and you're now living and working on the Mendocino Coast.
Yes, I was born in Chile, and I grew up there. I went to college and studied to be a Spanish teacher, and also I have a degree in journalism and mass communication. And this past March, it's been 16 years since I moved to the Mendocino Coast, and I live very close to the Mendocino town, the town of Mendocino.
Okay. And Jackie, you grew up in Fort Bragg, and you went to college at Occidental in L.A., is that right?
Yes, I graduated about 2 years ago from Occidental College. I studied sociology and Spanish literature. And then actually after graduation, I took a year. Now I received a grant, Fulbright grant, and went to Mexico for 9 months. So I've been back in town 2 years after my return from college and that grant.
I see. And was it a big change going from Fort Bragg to L.A.?
Yes, but Occidental College is a small university, and it actually felt very much like home. There was a lot of political movement on campus, and there were Latinos and a lot of diversity. So I found my home at Oxy when I attended.
Okay, and how about getting a Fulbright? That's not something many people get to do.
Yeah, so I applied because I always knew that I wanted to return. My parents are both from Mexico, and I had never lived there, especially as an adult. So I wanted to go back and reconnect with those roots, because for me, that's always been something that I've wanted to do, to reconnect with the culture and to get to know where my ancestors are from. So I was lucky enough to be able to go and to do that, and it was a wonderful experience.
And where exactly did you go?
I went to the state of Hidalgo, which is 2 hours north of Mexico City. Mm-hmm. I was working as an English teaching assistant at a university in a town called Tulancingo.
Okay, and you liked it?
Yes, I really, really enjoyed my time there.
Okay. Well, there's a lot for us to talk about, and I've already mentioned immigration and customs enforcement, and then other issues which have been with us for a long time, the situation in Fort Bragg, where you're living, where a large part of the population now, perhaps somewhere between 30% and 40% of the population of the town is Latino. And I understand now that about 40-45% of the students at in the Fort Bragg schools are Latino, and yet there's little reflection of this in the structure, I guess we might say, of the town. Few Latino teachers. There are no Latinos, as far as I know, on the school board or on city council mm-hmm. or on the planning board. And I think, sadly, the situation in the county is pretty similar to that. So those are the kind of things that we could talk about today. But I wanted to, coming out with Loretto to Philo in the car, I was thinking about other things, and that is that we don't know quite what to make of our new administration and president yet, and some of the things that are already happening are things we're not really used to. But Loretto grew up in a country with an authoritarian regime. And she was telling me it was more really than just a military dictatorship, because there were lots of civilians who were involved in the dictatorship. For listeners who might not remember, it was the years of the General Pinochet, 1973, I think, until 1990. And so maybe Loretto, just so for food for thought, we might say, what was it like growing up in that kind of an atmosphere?
Well, those were really hard times to grow up. I was only 5 years old in 1973 when the coup happened. It was September 11, 1973, which is an interesting date, as we all know, because what happened later on in 2001 in New York, the same date. But anyway, at the time I was only 5 years old, and the president was killed that day, Salvador Allende. And years of work towards democracy and establishing and protecting the rights of workers and people were destroyed in one day. And during the first months of this government, this regime, many people were killed, and one of the things that has been more shocking for me always is to think how many social leaders, union leaders, anybody that was involved in politics. I mean, one needs to understand also that the government of Allende, the time of Allende's presidency, was very effervescent for many people in my country, because it was a socialist government, and it was Allende had tried to be president in, I believe it was like 7 elections before he was elected. And so many changes happened during the few years he was our president. So all that was destroyed, and then in the first weeks of the regime of Pinochet, he actually sent a group of militaries all over the country, killing all these leaders. So we had this situation where many of them were killed, and then others look for to be refugees and ask for asylum. And then many others went in concentration camps for years before they were actually expelled from the country. And we lived in a country where for 11 years we had how's it called when you cannot go outside at night?
Curfew.
A curfew, right. So we had curfew for years, and so when I was a child, I fear horribly nighttime, because the go times quite early at night. And that was really harsh. And then the whole country was divided by this presence, because every single social, any institution, either a university, hospital, not to talk about the whole government, was completely ruled by people in uniforms, and there was no dialogue allowed, and it was either with or against this government. So it was very difficult. It traumatized my whole family. It created a horrible fear. It changed the way people talk. There were words that couldn't be said. Needless to say, that culture was completely erased. Any mention to creativity or... I think that's one of the elements that is really interesting about growing up in a country where certain words are already considered offensive. And many of them were regarding poetry, including our beloved Pablo Neruda. His name couldn't even be said without creating a whole reaction for people that didn't like the left, or he was a communist. Anyway, and but the other element that I was reflecting lately is that nowadays, when in Chile and when we talk about this time, we don't refer it anymore as a military dictatorship. We actually use the word civil military dictatorship, because we recognize that many civilians and the upper classes and the elite were completely in agreement and supported this government and didn't really respond to the needs of the at-large population. So were really hard times to grow up. And so the dictatorship found me. My first years in college, we were still having the dean of the university was a mayor, and every single place you look around, it was a person in a uniform telling you what you could do and you couldn't. It was a ferocious time, and Pinochet not only submitted us to this regime of fear and control, but he also took our constitution and put it in the fire and wrote a new one. And this is the constitution that is still in place in Chile. So we have a really, really long way still, even without Pinochet, to recover for these dark times.
And I think we in the United States, maybe I should put we in quotation marks, but we in the United States, we don't like to think that we're a country where there's fear. We don't like to hear about a reign of fear in the sense that Loreto's just been talking about it. And yet I picked up this morning's news and found this study by the Luskin School of Public Affairs at the University of California in Los Angeles, a study that found that 37% of respondents said that they were afraid that a member of their family or that a friend might be deported because of their immigration status. And they found that amongst Latinos, the percentage went up to 56% of respondents, higher than for Asians and others, but still clearly more than half of the Latino population. And amongst the young people, terribly, they found that 83% of younger Latinos were worried about deportation and were wary about signing up for government programs. In other words, the study concluded the younger the Latino, the higher the level of worry. Now, this was done in Los Angeles. But Jackie, I wonder if you could come in here and tell us whether you notice any reflection of this kind of a problem in your own community in the Fort Bragg area.
Sure. Well, first of all, I work currently with early childhood education, and so I'm in touch with a lot of families. And I would start by saying that it depends a lot on the legal status of families, but definitely when the parents are illegal and the children aren't, there's a fear of what's going to happen to me or to the kids if both parents are deported. And I think that that's an issue that is very close to home. I am the daughter of two immigrants, and I remember as early as six, I was aware of the situation and the fear that came with that of the not knowing what was going to happen. So that's definitely very, very real now, I think, especially with the new administration. And I was happy to see I've gone to two different meetings that were held at Safe Passage through the Latino Coalition, and they discussed different issues in terms of resources and support, and they even had lawyers there talking about resources in town and people who could support and sort of how to deal with this new administration and the fear that it's causing those who know people who are here illegally or people who just don't even know how the situation or the lives of the people who are affected are currently. Like, I've heard of stories where as soon as Trump was elected, they decided to leave because of the fear. Now, I also have my fears, and I think one of my biggest fears is that fear makes people not want to speak up and talk. And that, I think, is a big challenge and a big hurdle that I'm not really sure how to overcome in my trying to figure out how I can help, how I could be of a support to others, in that you are scared and there is that fear of, well, if I speak up, is something going to happen to me or my family or whoever you're thinking about. But I think that for me, I've realized that not speaking is something that isn't an option, because I think it's a very important issue. And I think that also in these tough times, what we need is dialogue. And so I was really happy to hear that it's been going on a lot in the community, both in small groups, large groups, and I think even via email. So that's been great for me, is to know that I feel like this community really supportive of Latino. There's still obviously that fear, but I think that this county especially I feel a sense of security, and I say I speak for my family too. We've had conversations about that, and just the atmosphere here is very different than, say, in Arizona or in the border areas where there's always more conflict with immigration issues.
Yes, I'm so glad, Jackie, that you're talking about this, because I find the same in my personal situation. The comfort of being able to be in these meetings and talking with others and finding together our voices to overcome this fear, I think is very important at this time. I attended also a couple of these meetings that you mentioned, and I really appreciate also the place where we live, where we can create these connections and see also so many people that is concerned and it share this fear, but that we all know that we cannot remain silent, because these are times to support each other. And even if there are not maybe so many legal venues to help the undocumented as it is, we always can keep on working to create a safe, friendly community as we are doing it.
Could you say something about the Latino Coalition for our listeners' sake? What exactly is that and what's been happening, Jackie?
Yes, my understanding, I've been wanting to get more involved, but to be honest, I haven't been as involved as I would like. But it was a coalition created to celebrate the Latino culture, and it's not necessarily just like a political thing, although lately, because of the happening politically, they've had a couple of meetings that are focused on immigration. But they've also done cultural events. The most recent one was one called Sábado Domingo. It happened last
Domingo
month.
Gigante.
Oh, sorry, yes. Domingo Gigante, thank you. And it was a variety show. So they had people from the community did all sorts of things, like singing and dancing and poem reading and just a little bit of everything that celebrated the culture and kind of trying to bring that community. And of course, even though it's called the Latino Coalition, anybody could come, and it's just a way to celebrate the culture and to maintain it too. And so it's a really neat space for people to come and families that are local to meet and to get together and just discuss things that we have in common, to also share the culture with the greater community here in Fort Bragg and Mendocino.
Also, the Latino Coalition has organized meetings where they have touched more local topics, as in services that medical services that the families can get in town. And there was another meeting where an organization which I'm part of too is called the Home Energy Link Program. We presented at the Latino Coalition some of the programs we offer to help families to pay for their energy bills. But also other different agencies and organizations have provided information through this platform, which is called the Latino Coalition. We hope to keep it up alive longer and see how it will go.
A lot of the attention today is on the so-called undocumented people.
Yes.
Terrible to think that we have to qualify people with words like undocumented and illegal and so forth, immigrant. But that's what it is. I wondered if you could help us to understand a little bit more about what are the different categories that are involved in understanding the immigration situation in the United States today. I mean, so there are people without any papers at all, right?
Right,
and
yes.
And what else is there between citizenship and undocumented?
Well, I am not a lawyer, but as far as I know, when you come to this country with a visa, as a tourist or a working visa, if you overstate your visa, you will become an undocumented person because your status will run out. You can either change your status as to a permanent resident, but that's only possible through through ways to do it. So one is by getting married with an American, and the other one is by getting a job. Both of them are very specific, and so then you have also people that, well, anyway, so if you follow any of these two ways, you can actually become a permanent resident. And after 5 years, if you get married with an American, after 5 years, you can actually apply to be a citizen. And when you have these 5 years, you can actually do this process and be a citizen. And it takes some time to fulfill all the requirements. But there is a large majority of people that will just cross the border with a coyote or just, you know, will find some way to get here that is without an inspection at the frontiers, at the border. And people come from all over the world here pursuing the American dream. But, of course, our largest group, at least in our area in the Mendocino Coast, is people coming from either Mexico or Central America in their majority. And they come here and establish themselves in Fort Bragg. Conservatively, I think we can just say that at least 2,000 people in the city of Fort Bragg are undocumented. And they make a living in this area and establish themselves. Many of them have large families. Families get somehow reunited. Half of the family is here. The other half is on the other side of the border. So that's more or less what I see.
And what about green cards? Are there people with green cards?
Well, that's the green card is what is the permanent resident status.
I see.
Yeah, I guess the cards used to be green. So that's why they were called green cards. So now you need to, if you're a permanent resident, you have an A number, which is alien number, and a card that certifies that you are here legally, along with a social security number that will allow you to work and pay your taxes. So many of the undocumented people in Fort Bragg have gotten an ID number that allows them to pay taxes, because one of the things that we have been pursuing is to have an amnesty, or, well, I'm saying I would like to see an amnesty for all my fellow neighbors and friends that are undocumented. And one of the things that I have been promoting for years at the community is to pay taxes, which is a little a paradox considering the issue of our president that doesn't want to release his taxes payments. Nevertheless, I always tell my friends and neighbors that that's a good move because it shows that we have character. I became a citizen a few years ago. It's going to be 5 years this November. And at the time, I remember that one of the things that was more encouraged, it was this proving your character, meaning that you didn't have any legal issue matter that will taint your persona and creating actually, and that will be an obstacle to get your citizenship. And this is what we are seeing nowadays too, that many people that could actually moved from being a permanent resident to be a citizen that will somehow secure more strongly their presence in this country. They have somehow broken the law, and now that is being seen as something that it really won't allow them to get the citizenship. This is particularly worrying because, unfortunately, ICE, which is the organization that we used to call La Migra, so the immigration department, is not always quite sincere, or I don't know exactly what word to use here, but they lie to people when they take them in the streets and they don't have papers. And they falsely ask them to sign papers saying that they are going to be released immediately. And people not knowing English, because they cannot go to college if they don't have a social security number and if they don't have papers and so on. And it's hard for them to learn the language, living all their lives in the shadows. They just accept this, and they think this friendly officer is actually trying to help them. And most of the time, they are signing an expedite deportation paper. So we need to really be aware of this situation.
And even before now, I once attended a conference where a young woman was explaining how even with a green card, there was an aspect of fear involved, you know, waiting for those years to elapse and become eligible for citizenship, so that one was afraid to run a red light, a traffic light, for the worry of arrest and what that might mean for status. Is that?
Oh, yeah, that is still happening. This is the thing that I keep on saying to anybody that wants to hear me, is that you have to stay, you have to remain very vigilant of your actions and, of course, avoiding any manner of breaking the law. I mean, it's already pretty bad to cross the road with a recommended paper or without paper. But it's true. It's DUIs. It's zero tolerance for those. So if you have a DUI, that will really, really spoil your path to citizenship. But unfortunately, the situation here is that as soon as you cross the border without an inspection, you are already considered a criminal. So that's really hard. And when I talk about specific cases of my neighbors and friends with lawyers or advocates, the reality is none of them, even if they are getting married, finding love in this country and marrying a person that is a citizen, many of them actually cannot apply to be permanent residents, because if they were stopped at the border and turned back to Mexico and then cross the border again, that's considered already a crime, and it really puts them completely, leaves them without possibility to get a permanent resident status. And yes, Jackie, go on.
Sorry, I was going to just say that the whole immigration law, from the little that I know, is very frustrating. So my understanding is if a person comes to this country illegally and overstays for more than a year, the automatic penalty is that they return to their home countries for 10 years. Now, for many people, that's not even an option because their lives are here. They've lived here, they've come at a young age, and this is what they know. So leaving to what they call their home country is ironically not their home anymore, because they've made this their home. And you were talking a little bit, Loretta, about marrying, and that's one way that people could get citizenship. And the thing that frustrates is that's true. There's also a whole lot of other steps that need to be taken. Like, I think they really make sure that it's an honest relationship, because there has also been cases where people have taken advantage of undocumented immigrants and their situation and told them, like, if you pay me this, then I'm going to help you with paperwork. And that's what they mentioned at one of the meetings, that there are certain paperwork that you don't need to pay for, and people are taking advantage of people trying to get information and seeing their situation. And I think that part of the thing that's important is for the word to get out on what the rights are of people, because there are certain human rights that are protected even if someone's here without documents. So I think it's just, there's a lot of different issues that makes it confusing, and that's why I'm really glad that there's so much discussion about it. And I think that's one of the good things, that if you can see the glass half full in that way, that this fear and this different administration we're under is creating all of this dialogue that before I wasn't really seeing as much as it is now.
Okay, Jackie Loretto, I have to pause a minute here and tell our listeners that this is KZYX, Mendocino County Community Radio, and I'm your host this morning, Cal Winslow. Our program is called Where Are We Now? And our guests today are Jackie Ayala and Loretta Rojas. Well, the good news in California seems to be that California wants to take the lead in opposition to the president's immigration policies. And, of course, we have a large number of sanctuary cities. The bad news seems to be that ICE, which is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, that ICE doesn't particularly care one way or another about whether we're sanctuary cities or not. Just recently, the acting director, Thomas Holman, was in Sacramento, where he said, we'll just do what we want to do, and the president backs us. So that's really bad news. And more bad news, I'm sorry. I read again this morning in the Sacramento Bee this, and maybe our guests can comment. The Sacramento Bee writes, undocumented immigrants in Sacramento are selling their furniture and cars to rid themselves of bulky items in case they're deported. Those who have money set aside are sending it to loved ones in Mexico or Central America, convinced that the U.S. government will seize their cash to help them build a southern border wall. For some families, daily routines have been scaled back to essential trips only. The kids get dropped off at school and groceries are purchased, at least on days when rumors aren't flying on Facebook about immigration agents raiding the market down the street. They do leave home. They often carry Know Your Rights cards printed from the websites of a National Immigration Law Center that include what they should and shouldn't say to authorities if they're detained. This is a quotation. We're trying to be prepared for any situation, said a 39-year-old mother of three who traveled to the United States from Mexico nearly 17 years ago and is living here illegally. Does this have any resonance for you, Loretto?
Yes, it does. I heard also I think it was a city meeting where this the head of the ICE in California came to visit. Actually, it's the from a large country, right? I heard that too on the radio when it happened a few days ago, and unfortunately, it's right. It's what he's saying is like we are just going to enforce the law that is already in place. This is something that is not new. It has been happening before. I mean, you, Carl, may remember in the 80s where there were big raids on Los Angeles and other places in many big cities. This was just everyday bread, if I can say that, el pan de cada día. And that's happening also at these times, unfortunately. This is what the law is about. And if you're here and you are undocumented, you risk to be deported. And these laws are going to be reinforced, as the president promised. So this is something we see here a lot. At our meetings, I participate in different organizations in Mendocino and Fort Bragg, and we have been passing around these cards that you were talking. They are the so-called red cards, mm-hmm. where actually they have one side in Spanish and then the other on English. And on it, they explain what the rights are and what to do in case you run into an ICE or La Migra officer. So we see this a lot happening in the country. In Fort Bragg, the situation, as far as we know, is being quite quiet. In the past, on the immigration has come to town maybe twice a year. Every time they came in the past, they came with a list of persons of interest that they were looking for. When they will go to an address looking for this person, they will usually just grab the person they were looking that will be under a standing warrant or any other, you know, violation of the law. At least in Fort Bragg, we haven't seen any of this yet, and we are encouraging all the neighbors and friends to actually stop any rumors until they can be proved. We try to keep in mind that we cannot live under this fear that we are being talking about. So it's important to stop these rumors. But all that it was said in this conference is true, and this is what is being happening.
Jackie?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's definitely a reality that is happening. And I think that those cards that are being handed out are very reassuring to people in terms of at least they know their rights and what they need to do. So in order to prepare for the worst-case scenario, I think that it was a great idea of multiple agencies in Mendocino and Fort Bragg area to be handing these out and to explain that they have certain rights to a lawyer, to a phone call, to those sorts of services that maybe otherwise not talking about worst-case scenario because of fear of it would lead to families being even less prepared for a situation like this.
Were you aware of this when you were growing up also? I mean, was in your family this discussion about what to do in case of a situation like this? Because I want to somehow emphasize that this is something that the undocumented had lived under for years and years and years, not only now with this new presidency.
Yes, I mean, it was something that I was aware of. And like I mentioned before, multiple situations where the kids are born in the U.S. and the parents are here illegally or undocumented. And so then the fear of the children of what's going to happen if one day ICE comes and my parents are taken away. So it was definitely something that was present. I did not know about the cards or even the rights of people who are here without status. I learned about that in college when I went to L.A., and I was involved in an organization called Charla, and they are an agency that tries to empower Latinos and especially those who are here without papers or without legal status, and to teach them about their rights and help them with applications like for the Dreamers, the Dream Act, and all of those kinds of services. So I learned about more of the organizations that are out there in California and just nationwide that help with situations surrounding immigrants and immigrant rights.
And would you say that were there many other Latino students at Occidental with you? It's a very highly ranked college. You very must have done very well in school to have gone there. Were there others there that helped you to understand your own situation, plus what this country is really all about?
Yeah, and I will start by saying that I was a scholar. I received a scholarship through a partnership scholars program that is was started by Dr. Langer, who retired here in Mendocino County. And through the scholarship, I was given a mentor, and she mentored my sister and I from the time we were in eighth grade up to high school graduation and helped us prepare for college because I was a first-generation college student. So my parents, coming from Mexico, they didn't understand or were familiar with the school system even. So in terms of my education and how I ended up at Occidental College, it was in big part because I had mentors who were telling me what classes to take, and in school to my counselors, and I joined college prep classes and all of that. But I sort of got mentored into what I needed to do in order to get to college, because even though the Latino population is growing, in the universities we're not seeing the numbers. And I think a lot of it has to do because a lot of us are first generation and we don't know how to go through the system or how to apply for college or what that really even means sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So that program was great because it really helped my parents know how they could help. And my mentor helped me with editing my college application and all of that. At Oxy, there was a good number of Latinos, but not nearly what you would expect going to a school in Los Angeles. So the ones that were there, also similar to my experience, were there because they had mentors that sort of showed them the way and made sure that they were getting their requirements and all of that done. But nearly not as many Latinos as I thought that there would be in Los Angeles.
We hear a lot about your generation and groups like the Dreamers. Do you feel that your generation might be in a position to help make some bigger changes?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I actually ended in pursuing a career and working at a university because I saw the number of Latinos or even just not Latinos, but minority students who were dropping out of college because it was just such a different environment, and a lot of us didn't feel prepared for the kind of work that was required, or like I said, just even the system, like how do you prepare for a midterm and all of these terminology that you're not taught, and that in some homes are just innate almost. But I do see hope because a lot of my friends who I went to school with here, I would say about 70% of them went to college or university, and actually a handful of them, around 10 of them, are back in town right now working in various positions. So I do see hope, and I think that hopefully we'll also be able to influence the current community and our perspective, since some of us have a perspective of the whole immigration issues and we're bilingual, and just a different perspective of the changing community here on the coast.
Yeah, I think this is really relevant that we see this happening with these young generations in our area. I mean, we were talking early about how to break the fear that sometimes immobilize us to speak up or demand our rights. And this is something that I think is relevant at any age. I was saying to Carl when we were coming here that sometimes I feel bad that everything is put in the young generations, like you are going to change everything, but I'd rather want to think that we are all in this place to make this a better place. And at least in our community, we ought to keep on working for the benefit of the community at large. And I'm glad to hear that so many young people have gone to college and come back to our community. Because a few years back, I teach at Mendocino College. And at the time, I was teaching at College of the Redwoods. And we were discussing low enrollment and some people were saying, well, everybody just wants to leave this town. And I always felt that for the contrary, some of our young people will just go out and study and learn things and come back and keep on working together for our little town, where we can actually still being able to enjoy a place where we can keep go around with our things. Luckily, we don't live in a big city where these situations are encountered, as Carl was reading this news from Sacramento. So I'm really happy to hear that, and I encourage anybody that is in Fort Bragg or Mendocino area to join any of these groups that are trying to narrow the gap that naturally occurs with the immigrants, which in many cases come here without knowing any English and have children and settle down here, or they are young adults and it's hard for them to communicate. So this is a situation that creates this separation, and I and many others, I know Jackie is also part of that group, we are working to narrow this gap and strengthening the community.
Pause again, Jackie, for just a second here. I need to say that this is KZYX, Mendocino County Community Radio. I'm your host this morning. My name is Cal Winslow, and we're talking with two guests this morning, Loreto Rojas and Jackie Ayala, and we've been talking about the issues of immigration, the new issues as well as longstanding issues, and a little about what people are doing about it. Let me turn to ask you both some questions about Fort Bragg, because Fort Bragg does have a large Latino population. And yet, and let me say this as well. It's off. I don't know if you hear this, Jackie or Loreto, but I hear people say, "Oh, Mendocino, another day in paradise. Isn't life grand?" And yes, it's beautiful here, and there are so many things to love here. But the statistics are somewhat grim, and maybe we need to remind ourselves of that. The poverty rate in Fort Bragg is above 20%, which is higher than the state average, and it's higher than the county average. So, and then there's the point that lots of people don't even get taken into these statistics. 20%, who knows if it might not be higher. Rents in Fort Bragg, I looked this up, and now on average, the median in Fort Bragg is more than $1,000 a month, and that's in a town where wages are low. This is what we call a low wage area. There's no $15 an hour legislation here. Some other things, did I say this before? The school, now 40% of the children in the schools in Fort Bragg are Latino.
Yes.
And in the lower grades, the percentage is even much higher than that. And yet there are no Latinos on the school board. There are only two or three Latinos who teach in the schools. And then beyond that, there are no Latinos on the planning board of the city, none on the city council. There's a real problem of representation here, which I think must be connected to problems in the schools and elsewhere. I don't know if any of you followed this, but was it a year or two ago now where there was a very encouraging kind of uprising amongst the parents and the teachers to send a superintendent, I think his name was Bush, Charles Bush, to send him packing, and quite rightly so, because he was out front in his racist views. I wonder if either one of you would like to come in and talk about that side of the picture of Fort Bragg.
Yeah, I attended a couple of those meetings that you just mentioned, and I also was very encouraged by the number of people who showed up to the meetings. I remember one specifically that happened at the Dan and Gray cafeteria. It was filled with people who were there to defend their rights and to say that they wanted somebody in charge that understood the issues of Latinos and that respected them as humans, because that wasn't the general feeling of that superintendent. But it was very encouraging in the way that people were coming together to defend their rights and to have their voices heard. And at least for me, it was the first time that I saw this happening in Fort Bragg, and I was just very, very excited about it, and loved seeing everybody come out and just talk and discuss and start dialogues about different things. And one of the things that was brought up at one of those meetings was exactly that. Everybody who's currently on the school board, nobody is a Latino, and that given the population that is growing in Fort Bragg, that it would seem that that would be something that we should have. Now, I think, at least from my perspective, a lot of it is not knowing how to become a board member. It's a lot of you have to go out and seek that information. So I think that I'm hopeful that in the next couple of years we'll see more Latinos, especially those returning after college, will be on the board or will get more involved in the community and have some of those leadership roles. And I think that that will really be beneficial to the community as a whole.
Yes, I see also that this particular incident at the schools, at the public schools in Fort Bragg, also shown us how the Latinos, by using also technology and getting more connected through these smartphones and these social media groups that are created, are able to communicate faster and then also participating more actively in these activities. I also agree that education is very important, and sometimes people don't participate because they don't know what are the instances where they can actually be part of. And reaching out is very important, and empowering members of the community, particularly Latinos in these positions, is something that we really need to work into. We really appreciate, as members of the community, so many English speakers speaking for us and trying to help and trying to convey also the needs of the Latino community. That's really important to have. But I agree with Jackie that the younger generation and the more education we can offer, the more instances where people can get informed about these places where they can actually represent and convey their fears and concerns and making this area better represented.
And here's a question which I will spring on you. I hadn't thought about it before, but you know, both of you are Latinas. Mm-hmm. Not being a Spanish speaker myself, as must be obvious, but probably this is not just accidental. It's seems to be part of what's happening in the country today, that the new movements are so often being led by young women. And I wondered if either one of you would like to comment on what, if you see anything happening amongst Latinas and young women of color in the country today and in movements like this one.
Yeah, actually, I'm very interested in that topic. You were asking before about how many Latinos I saw at Occidental College when I attended, and most of those were women. And actually, I did my thesis on that, like, why women and not more Latino men? And so it was a very interesting topic for me because I had many friends growing up who I really admired for their wits and they were just really smart and really bright, but most of them didn't end up in a university or a college. And so in my study of this topic, it was really interesting to analyze just even like how the media portrays Latinos in American movies. There's very limited roles that are given to Latinos. And in most of those movies, they're gangsters or they're just criminals, or there's not many movies that have a Latino as a lead role where they're doctors or professors or anything like that. So that all plays into it, I think. But also the other thing that I realized was that a lot of them feel obligated to stay and work to help their families, especially if they're the firstborn and especially if they're the firstborn who have legal status. They feel a sense of needing to stay and help their families and just start working to help the family.
Yes, it's very interesting. I see this big movement of women getting more and more vocal and visible, not only in our county or in our countries, but all over the world. We can see now that it's this big movement of women finding again their voice, as we were saying before, and overcoming this fear. I think leadership in this case is falling upon women just because, unfortunately, in our local situation, we see this stereotype of young men, as Jackie was saying, that's happening so much, and we see that reflected in all the jails that are full of these brown men, or either Latinos or blacks, that even in the school systems are already ostracized and sent to juvenile halls really early in life, which is really, really bad, in my point of view. So I think it has it's a phenomena that is occurring everywhere, where we just know that we need to empower ourselves to speak for the ones that cannot. Maybe it's also a factor that women speak more than men, as they say. I don't know.
And Jackie, anything more on that?
Well, yeah, I think it's hard to just, it's sort of all-encompassing, this conversation, in terms of there's just, I think, a lot of need to look at the root of problems, because I think what we're seeing politically, too, is just that a lot of systems are really broken, and there's a tendency to fix the problem once it already happens. And I think that just a lot of policies need a change, and a lot of thinking needs to go into the way we prevent things from happening, like the school-to-prison pipeline that we see with a lot of men of color especially. And I think that that's something that encourages me also into having these conversations with my peers, to see, like, in our various fields, like, how we could help with, if at all, like, to empower and to think of solutions that are more preventative and hit the root of the problem.
Oh, that's a great way to conclude. I'm afraid we have to do that because our time is running out. And so I'd like to say thanks. Very much thanks to Loretta Rojas and Jackie Ayala. It's been great having you on the show, and I want to be honest here, and I hope this won't seem to be patronizing, but I think it's also, and our listeners should recognize this, been brave of you to come on the air like this and put forward your feelings, which are so important to all of us, and I don't normally editorialize much on these programs, but I think in listening to these two terrific people, we should also recognize that it's a time now for all of us to step forward. This is Cal Winslow. The program is Where Are We Now? And next week, 2 weeks from now, we'll be back, and our guest then will be the geographer from the University of California at Berkeley, Richard Walker. Thanks very much, Loretto. Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And thanks, listeners.